This week's podcast on the mark. I've got Harriet Walker, one of the best dietitians in Australia. She'll probably tell me later that she is the best. How are you, Harriet?
Good, thanks, Greg. And it's always good to be confident about your abilities.
Week, we've got a really good topic, getting back into training post-ISO.
Yeah, this is a topic that's very dear to my heart, having not been able to access a gym for 3 months. So I've got my top tips for introducing diet exercise back in to help everyone do it successfully.
Let's go.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition.
Hey guys, this week's podcast is brought to you by the BSC Collagen Low Carb Protein Bar. It will be available in Woolworths in the sport and diet section. Harriet, we put 5 grams of Tenderfoot collagen in there just to make it different to everything else on the market, and we've kept it low carb, high protein.
That's really great news. I like that it's a portable source of protein. It's got that clinical dose of the Tenderfoot, which has been involved in some really great studies. So it's a really great way of supporting your tendons and ligaments whilst also having a delicious treat on the go.
And the extra good thing, Tenderfoot has just been voted the Sports Nutrition Ingredient of the Year.
That's a pretty good title.
Not bad at all. It's available in a bar. Get them at Woolworths. Harriet likes them.
Delish.
Welcome to Body Science HQ, the world of fit, happy, healthy. And this week, we're going to rip into getting back into training post-ISO. So post-ISO for me has been a little less training and probably a few more beers than normal, Harriet. I'm just going to throw it out there. There is no such thing as a Friday and Saturday anymore. They seem to have merged into one.
Yep, it's Blur's Day.
It is Blur's Day. I like that. So now that school's back, we've officially got school nights back in our house. So that's a new rule that I think a lot of people run by.
Yep.
So you've had a chat with the customer service team and you've come up with the 7 questions you want to throw out. Is that right? Or 7 tips?
7 tips. So these are just like your 7 steps, 7 points that you can pay attention to help sort of transition back into training and healthy habits. Because look, for a number of different reasons, everybody's been affected by, you know, the restrictions from COVID-19 in a lot of different ways. And, you know, whenever there's a big change or a crisis, we do go through these phases. And one of them is to just sort of lose interest and to sort of pull back a little bit. And that's totally understandable.
Insert the incidental snack here.
Yeah. I am so guilty of this stuff, Greg.
You mean if your fridge 10 feet away from you, you didn't do any meal planning?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was working from home still, so that didn't change. I was still isolated, so that didn't change either. But I think not being able to go to the gym, not really having the goalposts were moved.
Yeah.
And you know, there was a time there where we didn't have any clue about how long this was going to go for. So I think people got a little bit despondent, and comfort eating is a very human thing to do. And so when you've got nothing else to do, why not have a glass of wine, you know?
Well, that theory has played its way into some households.
Yeah, it's 1 o'clock somewhere.
The first thing you've got here is start preparing some healthy options and reduce incidental snacks.
Yeah.
So what's your tip there?
Yeah. So this is one that I recommend for people who work from home. I mean, this is before this all sort of happened. Having prepared options takes a little bit of the guesswork out. We get a little bit of decisional fatigue when it comes to lunchtime. You're standing in front of the fridge and you don't really know what you're going to have, which leaves you open to making the easy choice. And very commonly, the easy choice is the one that is probably less nutritious. Unless you prepare food in advance and you've made the easy choice, the healthier option, by having your lunch boxes ready to go beforehand. And the other thing is incidental snacking. It's the sort of snacking that occurs when you're having a bit of a break from your desk, you walk into the kitchen, you stand in front of the cupboard and you stick your finger into the peanut butter jar and then you grab a handful of crackers and then you walk back to your desk. You didn't really plan that. It didn't really create a sense of satisfaction to you. It was just calories that you took on board because it was there. It was a bit reactive. So we want to get a little bit more intentional with our meals and our snacks. And that is one way of doing it, is by having them prepared and having a bit of a plan.
Yeah, you would have just hand sanitized earlier before you stuck your finger in the peanut butter. So you're probably wondering what to do with it after that.
When you're in isolation and it's just you, it kind of almost doesn't matter.
If you're living in shared accommodation, it's probably not the right thing to do.
It's probably not a good thing to do. Definitely wash your hands, people.
So, Harriet, should we be putting our diets down on paper or anything around this first point you've created here, or should we just go, that's what I'm doing and be strong?
You know what? what? I think there's something to be said for meal planning generally. You don't have to be very prescriptive with it. You don't have to know the macros necessarily. You don't have to know the calorie intake. Sometimes, like, just having a whiteboard with Monday night dinner, we're having salmon. Yeah. Tuesday night dinner, we're having steak. Wednesday, we're having tofu. You know, it just means that your brain has one less thing to...
Did you say tofu?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I'm just being inclusive, Greg.
Okay.
Making sure that everyone's accounted for. But, you know, it's really important that there is a bit of a plan around it, because you get to 5 p.m. and you're like, oh, I haven't really thought about this. The easy thing to do would be to support local business and go get a takeaway.
Absolutely. You're cooking, snack while you're cooking.
Snack while you're cooking.
So simple to do.
Yeah. And I mean, a glass of wine could be counted as a snack for some people these days.
Well, that leads into the second point here. Put some boundaries around alcohol intake.
Yes. Yeah. So
you're still smashing the rosés. And when I say smashing, I know you're a dietitian, so you don't smash alcohol, but you very much were all over the rosé a while ago. Is that true?
I am always about rosé.
Yeah.
Smashing.
I honestly think your bread, potato, rosé diet would work. I think people would really go for it. You should really have a look at it.
I would go for it.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly.
I think if I didn't know any better, Harriet, when she was 19, would have loved the bagel, potato, and rosé diet.
Nice. Yeah, it's got a bit of French to it when you think about it. So what are these boundaries around alcohol intake you're talking about? Do you put a fence up? What are we doing?
Yeah, you can put a fence up. You can build a wall. But what you could also do is just take a look at what you're currently doing. I've had a chat to a lot of my clients in the last couple of weeks. They come crawling back after a little bit of a hiatus. And one thing is that alcohol, where they didn't used to, like you said, drink on a school night, has kind of crept in. And the ones who did sometimes drink on a school night were having their after school drink a little bit earlier than usual.
Very easy done when you're home by yourself.
Yeah, no one's watching. And, you know, there's a bit of boredom involved in there. There's a bit of, you know, whatever the reasons that people sort of start doing that habit. But now is a really good time to set some black and white boundaries around this, because it just helps when you know that, you know what, Monday to Thursday, I don't drink alcohol. It's a nice, easy message. And it makes sense, because obviously we know that alcohol can impact, you know, cognitive function. Our performance during the day can make us feel a little bit slower.
Our budgets.
So it does make sense. And budgets, absolutely. And for other people, I've started doing like standard drink budget. So I'm like, all right, you can have 5 standard drinks across the week. How you spend them is up to you.
And is 5 standard drinks over a week for someone who's not seriously taking their weight loss journey okay?
Yes, absolutely. And this might be a step from a higher intake to a lower intake. So some people aren't necessarily capable of going from something to nothing. So we might sort of eke that down each week and say, okay, we'll start with, you know, 4 or 5, because they might be a sort of a heavy social drinker, and social drinking is something that's really inherent in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Asking somebody to completely stop drinking, you know, it doesn't always work. So it's about sort of creating strategies to enable them to sort of stepwise reduce their intake. And again, we need to acknowledge that no level of drinking is it's not safe, but we can follow a few guidelines in terms of not drinking more than, you know, 2 or 3 standard drinks in one sitting, having a couple of alcohol-free days in the week, and just being mindful about how and when we're using alcohol, and then acknowledging that alcohol doesn't do anything for your recovery from training. So if you are looking at getting, you know, really digging into your training, then excessive alcohol is definitely not going to do you any favors.
And so set the actual setting of boundaries. How do we become accountable to ourselves around that?
Well, you can talk to your dietitian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good, you're laughing, but that's a very good point.
Yeah. You could talk to your partner or your housemate, or you could write it down and put it somewhere visible. There's a couple of different ways you can kind of work around.
Do you get your clients to write it down so they acknowledge it, or journal it, or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, I normally give them a bit of an outline, some goals for the week.
Yep.
So it might be that this week the goal is to go no alcohol for a whole week, or it might be no alcohol till Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
So yeah, we definitely negotiate the goals for the week, and that can be quite effective because they've come up with the concept and they've got somebody to be accountable to. So it's a black or white, did you do it or did you not?
Okay. I was at a function yesterday, family death, and there were some very big wine glasses there, and I just want to set the scene here for what is a standard drink that you're talking about.
Yeah, so a standard drink contains 10 grams of alcohol, and so that can look different. So a standard drink for spirits would be, I think it's 30 mils,
yep,
will contain the 10 grams of alcohol. For white wine and red wine, I have a feeling it's 120 mils will contain the 10 grams, depending on how strong the alcohol is, percentage of the alcohol content of the entire drink. And, you know, beer, there'll be light beer and then mid-strength and full-strength beer. So they will have different serve sizes. But it's, you could be drinking a full-strength beer from a can, and that might actually be 1.2 standard drinks.
Yeah, okay.
So it's just important to refer to that. They'll have the standard drinks on the label. So refer to that.
So it's not poured drinks, it's standard drinks. That's what I was trying to get across.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's not free pour. I could have a big fishbowl of a wine glass and fit half a bottle in there. So I saw some pretty funny memes on Facebook around teaching kids about fractions using wine.
Hey guys, this week's podcast is brought to you by the BSC College and Low Carb Protein Bar. It will be available in Woolworths in the sport and diet section. Harriet, we put 5 grams of Tenderfoot collagen in there just to make it different to everything else in the market, and we've kept it low carb, high protein.
That's really great news. I like that it's a portable source of protein. It's got that clinical dose of the Tenderfoot, which has been involved in some really great studies. So it's a really great way of supporting your tendons and ligaments whilst also having a delicious treat on the go.
And the extra good thing, Tenderfoot has just been voted the sports nutrition ingredient of the year.
That's a pretty good title.
Not bad at all. It's available in a bar. Get them at Woolworths. Harriet likes them.
Delish.
So we're talking training post ISO, and the big one to watch here is watch your energy intake. Don't go too hardcore.
Yeah, okay.
So and I guess you're not talking about don't increase your energy intake. Don't go too hardcore on reducing it.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. So one of the biggest stumbles that I see with people is they take their energy budget and they almost halve it because they're like, right, today's the day, Monday, we're back on, I'm going to be so good, and they've halved their energy intake. They haven't really potentially done any calculations as to how much they should be having.
Yes.
And they go all or nothing. So it's like a kale smoothie for breakfast. It's a tuna salad with not much else for lunch. And then come 5 o'clock, they are ravenous and they end up overeating. They might last a few days on that pattern.
Yep.
But from my experience, when we cut calories too low, too quickly, we get this rebound effect and we find that people overcompensate and they get these intense feelings of hunger, which is a natural response to reductions in energy intake. Start with the first step. So start prepping your meals, get more mindful around your snacks. So you just need to make sure that you're a bit sensible with what you cut out and don't go ham, because, you know, especially if you're going back to the gym the same week as you're starting up your diet, you can vastly undereat. And for many people, that ends up in an absolute disaster of overeating, overcompensating. So just start by, you know, cutting back on the junk food if that's crept in. Start by watching your alcohol intake, and then you can start sort of molding a little bit more, just depending on what your goals are.
Yeah, nice. What about build volume back up? Where are we here?
Training. Let's take myself, for example. The last 3 months, I haven't had any access to any gym equipment. So I've been doing body weight exercises and running. I'm not a runner by the general rule. It's an attitude, but I have been getting quite fast, can I say.
Did you find you were eating more when you started running?
No, but I think that has to do with the fact that I exercise like quite a bit.
Yeah, okay.
And the running was less than probably the volume and the intensity that I'd normally do.
Yep.
But there is research. I mean, there is definitely evidence to say that increasing exercise in order to lose weight can actually backfire a little bit, because we do get increase in hunger when we increase exercise.
Yep.
And it's just a normal response. So now that it's week one of me having access to a bit more equipment, my old Harriet would want to go to the gym twice a day for the next 4 weeks and probably end up with some sort of injury, overstretched and a bit sick. If I did that. I have to respect my body, and it has not been doing much work. It's done the best it can. We've done the best we can, me and my body, the last 3 months. But if I go completely crazy in the first couple of weeks, A, I probably won't be able to sit down without intense pain, but also just building back that volume. Same way that when you're going back to the, you know, when you're starting at the gym, you don't want to go 5 days a week, because, you know, it just does increase that risk of injury when you're not conditioned. And then trying to pull the same weights that you were pulling, you know, before everything got shut down. It's sad that you can't do it, but it also won't take that long. If you've been training consistently for a while, it won't take that long at all to get those numbers back up again. So just being a little bit sensible, having a bit of a plan. If you've got a trainer or somebody to talk through some strategies around building up the volume, then that's definitely a good idea.
Yeah, that leads into your next point you put here, is don't compare to where you were.
Absolutely. Like, this can kill you, really. It can be, you feel really upset. I've probably had three stints where I've had the 3 month block of training off. One of those blocks, I was on my way to the gym to do a 2K erg, and I was off to go get a new PB. Like, I'd taken my body science chaos. I was in the car. I was ready to roll. Got to halfway through the gym and I was in a car accident.
Ooh.
Which had me, like, wasn't serious, but I did have some damage to my sternum, which meant that I couldn't train for about 10 weeks. And the next time I got on the rowing erg to do a 2K, I probably put about 2.5 to 3 minutes on my old time. So wow. Not only did I not get to do my PB, I was 10 years behind where I thought I was going to be at that stage. So I learned at that stage, sometimes when you go back to the gym after a period off, you just have to go and do the work with no expectations of yourself. You just need to finish.
Yep.
And sometimes just finishing is enough.
Yeah, nice. What about if we were to take that away from the training aspect and talk about, you know, I used to be fitter, healthier, lighter,
yeah,
more muscle.
Some people definitely torment themselves by keeping clothes that no longer fit. I think it is really important to acknowledge where you are currently, not putting life on hold until you get to your goal weight or whatever it is, because, you know, if anything that we've learned, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So it's really important that we enjoy ourselves no matter what our situation is, where possible,
nice.
Despite the, you know, the goal. You can still enjoy where you are now without and also want to change. So that's really important, just to, I suppose, take a moment to appreciate what you do have now, and then also have a plan. If you want to make improvements, then by all means, definitely do it. But don't put your life on hold until, you know, you hit your goal, because you're going to miss a lot of very valuable time.
Yeah, nice words. Incremental exercise. Now's the time to start looking at, you know, we probably didn't need to drive our car as much the last couple of weeks. Maybe we rode a push bike a little bit more than we had before, or even went for a run or a walk.
Yeah. This is something I talk to people about when they're looking at, you know, making a change with their health status. We always look at diet. We always look at exercise, like structured training, gym, that kind of stuff. But what we miss quite frequently is the amount of incidental exercise we do each day. And that can play a massive role in how much energy you expend. So I know I work from home and I train at a gym that's just down the road. So my requirements for walking is almost zero. If I didn't actively seek out steps, I would probably do 500 steps a day and that's it.
Wow.
Which means the difference between me doing my 7,000 to 10,000, which is my target, 7,000 is realistic for me, 10,000 is a real stretch, is probably about an energy expenditure of around 300 calories a day. Just from incidental exercise.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. So, you think about trying to reduce it out of your diet, it's a big effort.
Yeah, that's a whole snack.
Yeah.
And also incidental exercise is stuff that you can just sort of do bit by bit across the day. So, you know, if I'm sat down for 2 hours to write something, I will get up and I'll go for a walk around the block. And if I did that 3 times a day, that's 2 kilometers that I wouldn't have done otherwise. And it's the same thing. I look at car parks all the time. So there's a shopping center just near my house and it's quite large and the car park is large. All of the car parks right near the door are always like you can't get a spot. And then you go 200 meters diagonally to the other end of the car park and everything's free. So I always park unless I'm in a hurry or if I've got something heavy to carry or, you know, if someone's injured and all whatnot, that's totally legit. But where the opportunity lies, I'll always park further away. And that's, you know, if it's 200 meters to the door, I do my shopping and then 200 meters back, that's 400 meters that I wouldn't have done. And then you multiply that across the week. And that's, you know, a few extra kilometers that you've done. Multiply that across a year and you've probably done a couple of marathons before without even sort of thinking about it. Not run them, but you've walked them anyway.
Nice. Good advice.
Yeah. So definitely paying attention to incidental exercise. It's a nice, easy way of just being mindful about moving your body more frequently, which is always a good feel-good thing as well.
Well, let's finish this off with another paying attention. Paying attention to our portion sizes.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, another fix that I've advised a few of my clients on is they know the right foods to eat. They're pretty good with the types of foods they eat, but they come and they say, like, I'm eating clean or I'm eating well, but I just can't lose weight. Like, it's not shifting. And then we look at what they're actually consuming and the portions are quite large. And when I ask them, do you feel pleasantly full after that meal or do you feel uncomfortably full after that meal? And the answer most recently has been feeling uncomfortably full because they might've served themselves themselves up what they would like without probably paying attention to how much they actually need, which is generally a little bit less than what we would serve ourselves out. So
it's okay to ISO though. You just turn Netflix on and lay down.
Yep, absolutely. You know, there's a little bit of extra space in the digestion, just digestive area. Just fixes that when you're wearing stretchy pants too. Doesn't really matter.
So paying attention to our portion sizes when looking at getting back to training, what type of things do you think people should be looking at from that pure training element now? Not so much weight loss or calories per day, just from that, haven't been training, now I'm going to hit it.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'd be making sure that on my plate, I've got a good chunk of protein in there. Yep. I'd be putting some, like a protein shake around training just to make sure that that was getting enough of that in to maximize that muscle protein synthesis. Then I'm also looking at carbohydrate, you know, what's the intensity of my training, and looking at making sure that I'm having some good quality sources of carbohydrate around my training to fuel and recover from.
Yep.
And then making sure I'm having lots of colorful fruits and vegetables for the fiber intake, but also for the antioxidant component. And yeah, I suppose the rest you can kind of modulate around that. But when it comes to training, yeah, but definitely making sure that I'm looking at my pre and post training nutrition, getting back into it. Again, you know, haven't been training for a little while now, but I've put a tub of Athlete Standard Whey at the gym that I've got a little bit of access to at the moment, so that I know that as soon as I finish my session, I walk over, open the tub, get my shaker, scoop out my serve, and that's my recovery kind of looked after.
You're drinking that on water?
Session. Yep, on water. And when I'm doing a bigger session, I've also got the Nitrivol there too, so it's got the extra carbs and the creatine in. So just paying attention to the type of intensive training that I'm doing. If it's a lighter session, I'll just have the protein. Even if it's a sort of a very high intensity like rowing session with weights, I'll put the carbs in at the end as well with the creatine.
I'm just going to add another one here at the end because you love it when I do that.
Oh yeah.
So a lot of us have been at home, we've probably been eating a little bit more and had a lifestyle that's very different. Once we hit the gym again, we tend to go back to the caffeine and the stims leading into a training session. What's the latest data in relation to how much caffeine we should be having a day, just for those of us that haven't smashed it in the last couple of months?
Look, there's plenty of research to say that caffeine is definitely a performance-enhancing substance, so it's an ergogenic aid. Generally speaking, I think the rule of thumb would be somewhere in the vicinity of 200 to 300 milligrams of caffeine per day. With caffeine intake, it's generally what we call like a U-shaped curve. So there's no benefit if you're not having any, and there's usually a detriment to your performance and state of mind if you have too much. But at the top of the curve, there's a sweet spot. Some people are more sensitive to caffeine than others, so their curve might look slightly different. Some people don't have caffeine because it just doesn't agree with them at all, and that's the thing as well. But you know, I'm normally looking at 200 to 300, which is going to be the equivalent of maybe two or three cups of coffee. Yeah. It might be a cup of coffee and some pre-trainer. I think the standard dose in a lot of pre-trainers is going to be 150 to 300 milligrams, depending on one scoop versus two. So from a sports performance perspective, it's generally dosed at 3 milligrams per kilo of body weight. Up to 6 milligrams per kilo of body weight would be a very high dose, but that's for sports performance specifically. And just making sure that you're paying attention to what time you have it. If you train at nighttime, it can interrupt with your sleep. Some people can have caffeine and have no problem with their sleep. I know I need to cut my caffeine intake off at around 4 o'clock. Otherwise, tired and wired.
I love it. Well, Harriet, thanks for getting us back into training post-ISO. That was entertaining and very educational.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me. And it's really fun to be able to zoom in from right here in my office at home, which is great. So yeah, thanks for having me along, and I look forward to the next one.
So anyone looking to chat with Harriet, it is
at Athletic Eating on Instagram. I put all my information posts up there, so lots of good research and good tips. You can also find information about bookings via that space as well. So links to my websites from there as well.
Nice. And for anyone out there that wants to have a look at the supplements that we've talked about today, bodyscience.com.au, you can definitely find everything you're looking for there, or find a retailer to get them from.
Thanks
for listening.
See ya.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.